Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, jumping in to tell you about this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food roundup. This week, we're introducing you to some amazing women taking a stand.
So often, being sexually harassed feels like a loss of control. And so I wanted to have these very tangible guides to say, here's what you can do.
Others are pushing for more diversity at major food industry events.
I still feel really determined to do, you know, whatever I can to help shift that and in a direction that's not just more diverse, but more equitable.
We also have a report on that summer business staple, the lemonade stand.
The lemonade stand might be the purest form of starting a business. Low overhead, easy to get into, and requires little experience or special equipment.
Don't miss Meat and Three, your weekly 15-minute food news roundup from HRN. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Search MEAT plus sign THREE. And thanks, as always, for listening.
This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Pizza Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Done.
Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez.
Hi.
How you doing, Stas? Oh, also, we got Dave in the booth.
Hi.
And we're back to take your kid to work life, we have special guest Booker Arnold.
No school today.
Yay. Yeah. Why no school today, Booker?
My teacher's at a conference.
Oh,
I wanted to tell you I now have a job at Nastasia's Pasta Shop called Pasta Flyer.
Oh, we've been talking about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you should call all of your... By the way, Nastasia Lopez attempting to overtake McDonald's as America's best first job.
You don't like McDonald's?
I like them fine.
Nastasia has nothing negative to say about any quick service restaurant.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The McDonald's website says our commitment to quality, but my mom says, yeah, right, they're just trying to sell you their food.
Yeah, they just sold your mom out.
So if
great, now we're never going to get that McDonald's sponsorship.
Oh, yeah, because Heritage Foods was really pushing for that.
My brother also says there's pink slime in the nuggets.
Your dad probably has stuff to say about that.
Specifically, McDonald's has, like, McDonald's has hired and made fake, what do you call fake, like those fake advertorial, like fake news things? What do you call those things where the company pays for it? You guys do those,
what?
Right? You know what I'm saying? Where, like, a company will come in and be like, hey, make it look like you're a news correspondent, but really we're just going to push our crap. What's that called when the people do that?
I have no idea. Is there a word for that?
Yeah, there is. Anyway, so, like, McDonald's has one of those where, like, a theoretical neutral person is interviewing someone on the McNuggets line at Tyson. So Booker does nothing but watch.
Oh, like, as if they're doing a...
Yeah, as if it's a news story.
Tyson is cruel to their livestock.
Okay, Booker, so, like, Booker... is, as you know, just so you guys know, like, as most, I think, probably 16-year-olds, is extremely susceptible to internet hoo-ha. Now, I'm not pro Tyson,
but what does that word mean?
Hoo-ha?
No, susceptible or whatever.
Family show.
Yeah, it's susceptible.
Can't talk about hoo-has.
It means that you are likely to believe things that you hear on the internet.
Tyson punches and throws their chickens.
Okay, that's not the case. Why would they do that?
How do you punch a chicken?
Why, like, would you punch a chicken?
Why?
They also suffocated one by standing on its head.
Okay, like, listen, this is not... I don't believe this to be
Booker's
accurate.
Booker's a real conspiracy theorist,
look at that,
huh?
Booker, 200 tricky words.
But, I mean, like...
Booker, you don't believe the Earth is flat, do you?
No, it's round.
Thank you.
Yeah, because the internet tells him so. But the,
Well, half of it.
Yeah. Well, my point is that, like, I am not, you know... I have a lot to say.
The Earth is not flat.
Yeah, correct. I have a lot to say.
Hey.
Yes?
I used to think we lived inside the planet.
Well.
I mean, if you count the atmosphere.
We may someday.
Excluding the atmosphere.
Someday sooner than later.
Yeah. So anyways, my point, I have a lot to say negative about, completely integrated chicken farming, but it's a more complicated subject, and I do not believe that, first of all, you know, Booker, Tyson doesn't actually raise the chickens. Did you know that? Tyson has farmers
right,
who
hold
make
on,
very
hold on.
Like almost nothing per bird, then, and they raise them. Tyson owns the bird, but they don't raise the bird.
Tyson's supply.
Yeah, okay. Anyway,
where'd you get that shirt? Didn't we get it together?
Yeah, I like that shirt.
P.S. No one can see his shirt because this is the internet. This is a radio-based podcast.
Yeah, but so you know, radio is the most visual of all mediums.
Yeah. Yeah.
Branded shirt, but it says Cortelyou, New York.
Cortelyou.
So, yeah. Well, no. In my family, it is
Cortelyou.
Yes.
Yeah, and Cortelyou does not mean the famous surveyor who made the first real maps of New York City, nor does it mean the stop
on the Q train.
Yes. No, it doesn't mean that. It is a synonym for cluster F.
You know, I used it in a. I got caught. I used it in a very important meeting, and everyone was like, "What?"
No, but the thing is, the word. No,
does it really mean that?
No. Booker made this up. Like,
this up in an urban dictionary.
Well, no, you can now. I mean, like, the fact of the matter is that it sounds like it's like, oh my god, what a Cortelyou.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, everyone knows you mean cluster F. It's a little bit nicer. You know what I mean? But I usually when I'm using it in context in front of adults will put the F beforehand.
Oh yeah, so that
F you Cortelyou. God. you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
God damn Cortelyou. Like go like but I use it but it, like no one has ever questioned the meaning because
no, I got questioned.
What would they say?
They were like, "What did you say?"
And you're I like, said Cortelyou, i.e. cluster. Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's like
we got a caller.
We got a caller, it looks like.
Then we have two. Do we have Jack and Derek or no?
No.
Hey.
We just...
What? Hey.
Derek.
Hey, Derek, what's up? So
still waiting on number two.
Jack told me that you wanted to talk about the Thundernut.
All right, so I as a test this morning said, you know, people can tweet in questions, and now I owe a person who's been, you know, listening for, you know, a long time, whose Twitter hashtag, or not hashtag, Twitter handle is Bloppins, right? Ben. He wants to know about the Thundernut. Now he has asked me this. He in fact mailed me a couple of those flour beers from Upper East Coast there to spin out in the spins all to harvest the yeast. Like the whole nine, and all this guy wants is the Thundernut specs. Now, for those of you that don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, I would like to know what that means.
Thundernut was a pistachio-based rum beverage at Booker and Dax. And it went on probably for the last, year? Yeah, R.I.P., right, Booker. For the last year or so of the of our run. Is that about right, Derek?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Now, the issue is, you know, Booker and Dax had a bunch of Orgeat specs, and Booker and Dax had a bunch of other specs, but the bartenders didn't make the actual pistachio rum. It wasn't an Orgeat; it was a pistachio rum plus Jack was what was the bar?
Jack's
spec
on
for?
There now.
Oh, hey, Jack.
Hey.
So Derek, now at PDT, was a bartender and also at one point bar back at Booker and Dax, and Jack was the head bartender at Booker and Dax. We have the two best people to discuss what was actually in the Thundernut. Now, when I received the specs this morning on how the stuff was made, I was upset because it was a crazy freaking spec. I mean, it's freaking bananas, like nutty. I can't believe we made that spec if it's to be believed. Now, here's the other thing. Derek has tried to recreate this for the Spinzall because I'm assuming that no one out there who's making it has the what we used in practice at BDX, which was a 3-liter benchtop Juan refrigerated centrifuge. So this is everything kind of in thing there. So Jack, first give the drink spec once you have the pistachio rum.
Okay. So the single drink spec was 1.5 ounces of pistachio rum, 1/2 ounce of Amaro Montenegro, 3/4 of an ounce of pineapple syrup.
Tell them how to make the pineapple. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, finish. Yeah.
And scant 3/4 acid-adjusted orange juice.
Okay.
And 5 drops of salt.
So what you have there is a basic Booker and Dax sour spec. It's a little off because Montenegro has sugar in it, but you got yourself a 2 3/4 3/4, right? Theoretically, if everything was booze and everything was working normally, you got yourself a 2 3 what? You got yourself a 2 3/4 3/4 right there, right? So
yeah,
so far hunky dory. Now, Acid-adjusted OJ, very simple. Every liter of orange juice gets 32 grams of citric acid and 20 grams of malic acid, stirred till dissolved, and boom. That's
what makes Warhead candy sour.
Malic acid?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we could talk about Warheads in a minute. Anyway, let's finish this one first, though. So that's your acid OJ. Jack, what's our pineapple syrup spec?
We were low-tech when making the pineapple syrup at Booker. It was just equal parts by weight, sugar, and freshly juiced pineapple juice.
That is a garbage spec. That's too sweet. That's garbage spec. We're garbage people. We should be shot.
Yes, I know.
We added a small amount of citric acid.
Citric acid.
Too. I think generally, like, I want to say it was like 10 to 15 milliliters of citric acid solution per pineapple.
But we didn't adjust for the sugar that was in the pineapple juice?
No, we used, this was a Mark spec.
What?
It was a McGuigan spec.
Listen, in the future, I don't care who is working with us.
I
want the stuff to be bricked right, not freaking taking something that has like 12 bricks already, like 11 or 12 bricks, and then adding another 50 bricks to it.
Well, this is becoming an episode of Bar Rescue.
No,
this is why everything in life sucks. This is why everyone everywhere is garbage, because no one can keep their numbers and their stuff straight so that stuff swaps out. Nastasia,
Booker,
back me up on this.
Booker, please stop touching the mic.
Nastasia backs me up 100% here too. It's like, if you're going to work in a big team and your team has rules so this stuff can get swapped in from place to place, follow the rules! Yes?
It's almost as if the rules change when management continue to change in the space.
No, but the rule's the rule. It's like, look, human beings, we keep having new generations of human beings, and we keep on requiring oxygen. You know what I mean? It's like, follow the rules.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so I have so now the spec is even crazier to me, because now all of a sudden it's a good bit sweeter than it was, but it's also a good bit more acidic, because first of all, the orange juice has sugar in it, because the orange juice is rocking at somewhere in the range of 10, right? 10 bricks or thereabouts, 11 maybe. We have pineapple, which is now clocking in roughly at 60 bricks, right? So right now we have a drink that's on the sweeter side, right? The acid level is also a little higher than normal, and maybe this all washes out because it's going to have a lot more texture when it's shaken because of the freaking pistachio.
Exactly.
Right? But now here, people, is where it gets really ugly. Normally, at Booker & Dax, we would make orgeas for nuts, but that would become the syrup. Notice from my loss of mental stability a minute ago that we already have plenty, more than enough sugar in this. So how are we going to get the nuts into the beverage? And the answer is we're going to put the nuts into the booze, which, by the way, is why we had to charge so much and didn't make so much of this stuff, because it was super expensive. Even though Florida Cana, which is what we use, is an inexpensive rum. If you buy Florida Cana,
so slightly more expensive.
What?
But
oh, we use the seven?
So a little bit more, but still.
But still, like, for an aged rum, it's on the... we use the seven. So, but for an aged rum, it's on the cheaper side, right? Because here's what we're about to do. Now, Derek, how do you do this stuff?
So it was actually a 3-day process, which, again, I don't know if all this is necessary, but it's just the way it was done at the beginning, so it's the way we continue to do it. So the first step, first day one, is you take 400 grams of pistachio, 650 grams of water, so we weigh it all out, let that soak overnight in a refrigerator.
Let me just add, when you're using pistachios, please sort through them and remove the shriveled and or overly yellow or brown ones. They will ruin. Do not sample the pistachios. They're made of mercury. They're poison. You will die.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so go ahead. So
make sure your pistachios are good. Soak them in water. Day two, take that mixture, blend it up. It does get pretty thick. So that mixture is per one bottle of Flora Cana. Jack, I think we were using 750 milliliter bottles.
We're using 750s, yeah.
So here's where you've lost me entirely, Derek. You're taking how much water? And you didn't drain the water.
600 grams of water is going into that rum mixture. So, yes, it's it's a little, it's weird to me too, because you're adding the pistachio and the water, so the alcohol, the ABV on that whole pistachio rum is coming way, way down.
It's in the it's in the low to mid 20s.
Yeah. Yeah, so that the thing that people didn't necessarily realize about that drink is that it's a pretty, it's a low alcohol cocktail.
All right, so you know, you're giving me heart palpitations here, Derek, but go ahead. So you soak the nuts, and you need to soak the nuts because you want the nuts to primarily absorb water and not booze, because we can't afford to lose any more liquid, I mean, any more alcohol. Yes. We also want to have the kind of strongest extraction we're going to get, so we want to soften these nuts up. So you blend the whole sucker together. Now, here's where it gets even weirder. You're blending in the Tickaloid before you spin?
So...
I think it was after,
so
it, to emulsify
the Tickaloid
fat.
Yeah, would get added day three on the spin. So day two, you blend, you add the rum, and then you, since the rum is added in, you don't have to refrigerate it for that next overnight. So then the third day, it's spun, add the Tickaloid right before, stir it up.
Wait, you add the Tickaloid after you spin?
Say that again?
You add the Tickaloid after you spin, right? Because otherwise, what the hell are you doing, right? You add the Tickaloid before you spin?
Yeah, we the spec that we had, we would add it before spinning.
This is freaking bananas. Yeah. Why? Look, maybe it works better. And you say you did this in the spin zone.
Yeah, so I recently did it with one of our Booker and Dax regulars. We tried it out because he'd been wanting the spec, and I recently got a spin zone. I wanted to try it out. And we didn't do the continuous. We just did it in batch mode. We were a little nervous about all of the – there's a lot of solids, a lot of the pistachio solids. So we just did it in multiple batches, cleaned out the rotor, and it seemed to work pretty well for us.
Really? What kind of yield did you get?
I didn't measure the yield. He kind of finished off the last of the batch after I left, so – unfortunately, I don't have the yield.
I mean, like, rough, like, what kind of yield did you get?
I mean, it looked pretty similar, very similar to the pucks that we had at in the spinning bucket centrifuge.
All right.
Everything, well, that the taste, consistency, it seemed to be very similar from to what I can remember doing a year or two ago.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't have Tickaloid powder, I forgot to call into the bar. In the copy of Liquid Intelligence that is at the bar, I have handwritten in the substitute for Tickaloid, because Tickaloid is just gum arabic and xanthan gum, and I forget. Jack, you're not at the bar right now, are you?
No, I'm not.
Hmm. I'll have to get that back, or I'll on the next show, if someone asks me, I'll get you a substitute. You know, Tickaloid, some people have trouble getting Tickaloid powder now, but it's just a mixture of gum arabic and xanthan. The xanthan is acting as the, stabilizer, right? So there's emulsifiers. Emulsifiers are like marriage counselors. They help oil and water live close to each other. And stabilizers are like traffic cops. They keep stuff from moving. So it's like... it's both. The gum arabic is the emulsifier, is the marriage counselor, and the xanthan's the traffic cop. So that's how, you know, that's how it works. But you know, I have a mixture that I made of you need to use the really good powdered gum arabic and try to get a fast dissolving xanthan gum. But it's something like three quarters of it is arabic and one quarter of it is xanthan. It's something like that, and you have to use a little more of that mix than you would of Tickaloid, but you know, give it a shot. But why the heck would you mix it beforehand, Derek, to make it harder to settle out?
Yeah, I just followed the spec. That's probably not the best answer I should give. But yeah, it seemed to work well. It, you know, it stabilized. You could definitely tell when you didn't add the Tickaloid, because it would separate. But, I mean, it's solved by just kind of shaking it up, you know, before you pour out the 1.5 ounces into the cocktail.
Yeah, well, I know you need Tickaloid. The question is, do you add it before or after you spin? That's the key. Now, the other thing...
We always added it before we spun.
Okay. This
shut
like
it down!
This is a lot to process... speaking of process, how long did you have to spin it in the spins all per batch?
We did a normal 15-minute spin.
Okay, so when you're spinning in a spins all with liquor that long, make sure you have the lid, the inner rotor lid on, and it's also keep the cap on the top, And also, I plug up the drain hole just so that you don't have too much evaporation out of the unit. Because, especially because you've already gotten rid of so much alcohol, you might want to keep the rest of it in there. So it's a good, if you like sweet, creamy nut drinks, it's a good session drink to have because it doesn't have that much alcohol in it. And I'm learning more about the old bar every day.
Every day. This is a this example is particularly egregious. This is a the nut rum ingredient just sort of appeared on the bar one day. Dee came up with it, said, "Here, use this." Right. And then one spec later, we had this incredible cocktail. It's like, all right, we're going to make this the same way that you made this every time because this is delicious.
So it's just
it
like
just
a,
so happened
yeah.
to have been made in an absolutely
exactly.
way.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, hey, look.
And, I mean, you can't argue with the success of the drink. I mean, people love that cocktail.
I'm not.
As illustrated by this guy's persistence in trying to get the spec for it.
Yeah, look, I'm not. Like, here's the thing,
yeah, we're
right?
talking about it on the radio.
Oh,
so.
Well, yeah. I'm not. Yeah, right. I mean, like, I'm not, like, opposed to. I mean, I'm mentally, here's the real issue. Here's what really is kind of like, you know, burning me up right now is that, you know, I think it's always good if you're running tests that go outside of what you normally do, right? And you get a good result. This is good. But if it's all black boxed and just, oh, here's a weird spec, nobody investigates it. When by that, I mean, tells me to investigate it, right? Because, you know,
yeah.
So like, then I can't discover whether or not we need to revise the way we do every freaking thing or whether or not this just is a one-off or boop-boop or boo-beep or boo-bop because I don't have the information. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like...
Yeah, this is by far the weirdest out there spec that we've had at the bar.
But maybe we could take that knowledge. I mean, look, everything we do, right? Milk syrup, milk wash, all this stuff is because we had some weird effect by doing it wrong or doing it weird, and we investigated it. But if it's just kept in a little cloistered box and you can't investigate it, this same thing happens like for any of you that are going to run a program or going to start a program out there, like the worst is when you like do development and it's like I love multi-person team-based efforts because I think the results are better and everyone gets buy-in. But then when stuff gets changed, you've got to remember to send information up and down the chain so that everybody knows what's going on. Otherwise, you know, like we were in a situation where you try to recreate a spec based on my knowledge of the chain, which is clearly deficient, then we're never going to get the result because I would never do it that way unless I knew it was done that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, whatever. You can't argue with people liking the drink, as Dave in the booth says. But I mean,
I wasn't the one who said that.
No. Oh, who? Derek said that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, anyway.
Do you want to take a break and cool off, Dave, or what do you think?
Yeah, I'll cool down. Thanks, guys. Thanks for calling in. I'll be right back. More cooking issues.
I'll see you at the bar. All right.
Think about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska Seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
And we are back. So, Booker, did you absorb anything? The microphone's pointed in the wrong direction, P.S. And you don't have your earphones on, so, yeah. Booker's really taking this seriously. Yeah. How you doing, Books?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
I wished I could stay in bed for longer because, like, it's off school.
What time do you have to wake up?
Well, I was woken up to walk the dogs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, want dogs, gotta walk them. I mean, that's just the way it works, you know what I'm saying? All right. Patrick O'Sullivan wrote in and said, would like your thoughts on a seltzer system with a corny keg in a fridge as a cold reservoir of still water, then plumb to a McCann or similar carbonator for on demand. And this is what he wrote. Keg would always have flesh water coming in. And
flesh?
Then he corrects and he goes in the next one. He's like, that is to say fresh water. Flesh water would not be good. Although now I have this.
That's twisted.
Flesh water.
Well, now you got to think about that. Yeah. Would it be good?
So flesh water is what sweat. Happens like when you're like those who rinse chicken, that like that kind of like with that scum on the top. Or flesh water is when you're in a not properly cleaned public pool and there's that like skim of human fat on the top of it when those hot indoor pools. You know what I'm talking about, Sasha?
I don't do public.
Nastasia pool. Will not get in a public pool specifically because fair she enough. Does not enjoy the flesh water.
Well, now I'm having second thoughts.
Hey, man. You know, that's not soap in the hot tub. That's human oil.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, all right. Anyways. So, back to the back off of the gross stuff and onto the question. So, basically, what Patrick wants to do is does not want to do a cold plate with ice, which is, you know, what I typically do. Would rather have a corny keg. So corny kegs are Cornelius kegs. They used to use them for homebrew now. They used to use them for soda, and some people use them for kegged cocktails and whatnot. But they're relatively cheap, relatively available. They hold, the standard one holds 5 gallons, right? Everyone, 5 gallons. Then you need a carbonator, right? The problem here is that in a standard commercial carbonation system like we have at the bar. By the way, the new bar's carbonation system, pretty good, right, Stas?
I haven't had it.
You didn't eat? I gave you water.
No.
Terrible person.
You are.
You are. Anyway.
You are mean to me.
That's when Nastasia calls me on the phone. It says, you are mean to me. And of course, you know, because one of our listeners made me a ringtone when Booker calls me, it says, shut up, Dad. Hey, Booker, can you give him another live shut up, Dad?
No.
What?
Come on, no. Booker. Lean in.
Think about how I
shut up, Dad.
Yeah, nice.
I'm isolating that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love it. You know what I mean?
What'd you have to think about before you said that?
Well, I had to think, I had to try to copy the voice. Mm. It's because he was saying annoying stuff.
Mm-hmm. What was he saying?
I don't know. Dad, what could you have been saying?
What couldn't he have been saying?
Booker is annoyed by pretty much everything I say, so that's why his ringtone, like, is shut up, Dad. Booker also, like, will occasionally, Booker has kind of stock responses to certain things. So if you apply the brakes or turn too hard in the car, he used to have a very specific.
Do not get to this, please.
All right. But he changed his specific reaction. And so he, you know, it's interesting. He's got, you know.
What is the reaction?
He doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it.
That's why I don't like cars. It's what makes a Subaru a lemon.
Yeah, he doesn't like our Subaru, but like, anyway, the other thing is, Nastasia, do you like that story about Booker with the amulet? Well, we'll get it. Let's finish our photo. Yeah, ladies like, you're never going to see me again. This is a nice gift. Booker's like, takes it, looks at her. She goes, Buddhist, and leaves. Leaves
did
the subway.
Did you keep it, Booker?
Of course I did.
Where is it? In a special place?
Yes.
He's not going to tell you where it is. Doesn't want you to go steal his endless
knot. Are you going to become Buddhist now?
I don't know.
I don't think he looked it up. But he does, you know, Booker, when he's in the subway, has a Zen look. He's got that kind of like Zen look in his eye. Anyway, okay, so we're back to this. So a corny keg holds about 5 gallons. It has a gas in port, which is at the top. And then it has a liquid out port, which is at the bottom of a long tube. So you can feed stuff into the top and you remove stuff from the bottom. In a commercial carbonation system, you have a carbonator. The carbonator is plumbed with filtered water straight from the supply at roughly 45 to 65 PSI. It's at room temperature. You then have your CO2 tank plumbed onto it at like I do. The reason why the sparkling water is so ripping where I am is because I do it at 110 PSI and then feed it through. And so that's at room temperature. It needs to be that high because you're doing it at room temperature. It then comes out of the carbonator as carbonated water goes. And by the way, if you ever set up a commercial carbonator, and I'll tell you this, Patrick, no matter how you do it, no one tells you how to properly set up a carbonator, right? Nobody tells you how to properly set up a carbonator. Even the McCann people, the people who make it, do not tell you how to properly set it up. Here, I will tell you all now, here's how you properly set up a carbonator. You fill it with cold water. Turn off your gas. No gas. Fill it with carbon, with a cold, regular cold filtered water. There's a vent valve on the top of it that's a flip valve, right? An overpressure and release valve. Open that. Flow it until it comes out of that. Then close it. Open up your taps. Run it until just with plain water, no gas. Run it until your taps run full of water. Then burp that vent valve a couple times. Now you've gotten rid of all of the air in your system, because I want you to mentally repeat, air is the enemy of carbonation. Air is the enemy of carbonation. So now you have all of the air out of the system. Now, here's the important part. Unplug your carbonator and or disconnect the float switch on it. Unplug it. I don't want any more water coming into it, right? You can leave the water on, but unplug it. Now, turn your gas on. Turn the gas on, right? Turn it up to whatever you want. Now, open up your valve and bleed all of the water out, all of it, until it sputters, and then stop. Now, your system is 100% full of carbon dioxide, 100% full, all right? Now, then you just plug it back in, and the pump will turn on and inject water into your carbonator, and that stuff will be fully carbonated. If you're carbonating at room temperature, I do, you can't really go over about 120, it's not, you can't, but I do it about 110, which is super ripping. Most people are going to be down closer to 100 PSI, right? Then after that, it comes up out of the carbonator and goes into a cold plate. Now, most jerks who hate quality, don't appreciate their customers or their own dignity, only pass it through one channel of a cold plate. A cold plate is just a bunch of stainless steel tubing. Oh, by the way, make sure you never have any copper after the carbonation setup. No copper at all. They have nickel-plated brass, works, stainless works, never copper, never. And also, I had to buy tube. I bought tube for the bar.
How do you say tube?
Turb. I bought tube from a reputable supplier. I will not mention their name because I'm so freaking angry with them. And they recommended I buy vinyl tube. They recommended I buy vinyl tube that was braid reinforced. Why? Because they said it was more flexible, right? And I said to myself, you know what, Dave? Your whole life, you know, decades, you've used braid reinforced polyethylene tubing with EVA jacket. Right? First of all, the hose has never failed. Never failed. Never failed. Secondly, it has never, ever, ever, ever imparted an off taste to any liquid I have ever put through it, ever. Right? Because polyethylene doesn't have all those nasty plasticizers that vinyl does, right? So this guy swears on a freaking stack of Bibles. I don't know why the hell I listened, but he swore on a stack of freaking Bibles that this vinyl tube, everyone's using this vinyl tube now, and that it's not going to impart any taste to the water. And so I plumbed it, and sure as shooting, the water tasted like death plastic, and we would have to run the water for like 30 seconds at a time, and you could see it foam and get nasty, right, as it was getting the plastic stuff out. Did you taste that, Stas, when you came over?
No.
Garbage. I was so angry because I was, you know, Jack and I were on our backs underneath our stations, like trying to like fit into these cold plates, which were way the heck underneath our stuff. And I was displeased. And we ripped it all out, wasted another day, ripped it all out, and replaced it all with the stuff that God wants you to use, which is polyethylene tube, braid reinforced with an EVA jacket, and our water tastes great now. I do use and do recommend the vinyl, the braid reinforced vinyl, you know, food grade vinyl tubing for gas lines, because it is more flexible and will allow you to do things like carbonate and shake better. Okay, so back. So remember, most people run through one thing of a cold plate. So you're coming from your tube, which please use polyethylene with braid reinforcement and EVA jacket. Please use that type of tube for your liquid. Now, I'm sure, you know, he was like a lot of people when they're running beer and soda, they can't taste it. I don't care. Just use the good stuff. So you're running it through, most people run it through one circuit of a cold plate, which is just a length of aluminum tube, a length of stainless steel tube that is embedded typically in an aluminum block. You have ice on that. As the ice melts, it very rapidly heats the aluminum, cools the aluminum block and gets your water down because the water is going through a quarter inch kind of a tube. So it has, you know, a lot of surface area for its volume and it chills very rapidly, not rapidly enough. Put it through two. So you're feeding into one, you take the out of that circuit, put it into the in of another, and then out of two. And that is the way to get good seltzer. You also have to get a good seltzer dispensing gun. I use only Cornelius and Becker post-mix soda valves. Post-mix soda valves, right? Not those nasty like Wonder Bar guns, not beer guns. They're different. They have a different compensator. It's not the same. It's not as good. All right, now back to what you're having here. You want to put a Cornelius keg in your fridge, right? Plumb your water supply into the Cornelius keg, into the top, into the gas port. You then want to have draw water out of the bottom through the product port and have it go into your carbonator. Your carbonator must also live in this fridge that you're using to chill your stuff because it needs to stay cold. If it doesn't stay cold, you're not going to have a good result. Now, your pressure on this is going to have to be lower, like 45 PSI, 40 to 45 PSI, in that range. I have never run a carbonator where the gas pressure was below the input, the inlet pressure of the city mains. So if you're flowing from your city water through a filter into the corny keg in the fridge, you might have to put a regulator on it to dumb your pressure down to below the pressure of your gas. I don't know. You might have to run some tests. But here's the main problem you're going to have. One, I don't know whether the carbonator is going to enjoy being in the fridge for long periods of time because of condensation. I have done it before, but you know, your results may vary. I can't guarantee because you might get moist on the inside of the thing. The other problem that you're going to have is this. Let's say you have a 5-gallon Cornelius keg and it's totally full with 640 ounces of water. Let's say you leave that water in there long enough to get down to 4 degrees centigrade. Okay. Every 32 ounces you draw out of that is going to replace about 32 ounces of the water in the corny keg with water that's at room temperature, roughly 25 degrees Celsius. 25 degrees Celsius, a 32-ounce draw of 25 degrees Celsius water into the corny keg will raise the temperature of the whole keg 1 degree. So if you're at four degrees and you draw 32 ounces, you now have a 5-degree keg. This is at these numbers. I mean, as the temperature varies widely, so will these numbers. But then when you draw another 32, now you're at a 6-degree keg, okay? And so you have to make sure that if you're drawing more than like a liter an hour, that your fridge is adequate enough to keep the temperature down, or you're going to get creep, 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 creepity, creep, creep, creep up in temperature. One way to get around this would be to, instead of plumbing it to your city, is to have a valve and to push like 20 PSI of CO2 into the top, let the whole thing cool down 5 gallons, and then just refill the whole thing, wait for the whole thing to come back down to temperature, and do it again. So if you're only drinking like a gallon a day of seltzer, like once a week, you could vent, you could, if you only have 20 PSI in the tank, you could just throw ice and water in and then have that thing rock for the rest of the time. And that's maybe the way I would do it if you start to see that your water's getting too cold as it comes out, too warm as it comes out. Does that make any sense at all, Anastasia? Sometimes it's like, I don't really care.
I don't care. And also, like, if you ever want to send Dave an email and want him to read it, just write subject carbonation question.
That is not even the case.
Anything in the body.
That is not.
That is 100% true.
That is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. All right, so.
Well, that was fun.
Anyway, look, do people want the real freaking answer?
I think,
like, are we a niche freaking show or not? This is a real
post
freaking answer.
Everything about carbonation on a website that's called like carbonationbydavearnold.com. And like every single
Who's gonna write it? You?
Well, you could just transcribe everything. For any carbonation question that has ever been asked should be transcribed and put on that page with links to the things.
Links to the diatribes?
No, links to the equipment that they need to buy.
But who's gonna do that? I mean, who would do that?
If we had a competent intern.
Book, are you up for it?
Up for what?
Wow, you're just harshing on everyone now. It's harshing on everyone. All right. Hey, Dave and the gang. This is from PH Tennant. Okay. Love the show. I'm planning on devising an extracurricular for school.
Where did you get these questions from?
I said tweet your questions in or call them.
Oh, did you see the other ones text?
The ones Matthew sent? No, I didn't get a chance to look at them because I was looking at my Twitter feed. If there's one that's important, take a look. I will do it next week. I was planning on devising an extracurricular for school. I want, kids, Booker, do you like extracurricular activities?
Like what?
I don't know. What's your favorite extracurricular activity?
He's here, isn't he?
No, yeah, standing at home is his favorite one. Right?
Like something you do outside of school. Is there anything that you like to do?
Taking the subway.
Okay, other than that, because that's a fun thing. Is there anything
for
else
him?
Working.
Okay.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, all right.
Nastasia, Booker might be the only person in the world who thinks you're a good boss.
I got some insight into Nastasia's management strategy earlier.
Why did Tyree quit Pasta Flyer?
You can't talk about that. You can't talk about individual people's issues on the air. So what was the insight into the management style, Dave?
I can't really say on air. You can't talk about people's individual issues.
I'm thinking about how Tyree quit.
Okay, you shouldn't talk about that because he has his own life and
we don't want to get sued, Booker, okay?
Why he quit is his own business. Okay, I want to teach kids 10 to 19 years old a little more about cooking, basics and more advanced stuff, whatever is fun, engaging, and beneficial. Do you have any ideas for a syllabus? Love from Germany, Lucas. Well.
Oh, that's why he likes extracurricular. He's German.
That's why what?
He likes extracurricular stuff.
Americans like it because now if you apply to college these days, if you don't have extracurriculars, you can't get in at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's if you haven't cured cancer by the time you're 18, you can't,
Yeah.
You're SOL, as we say.
If you come from a good family, you're okay. America.
There's a lot. No, but the thing is, there's so many people from, everywhere that, it's just, the numbers on, stuff like the Ivies, it's just stupid. I don't even understand it. It's just crazy.
That's what I'm saying. You got to have, the inside track to get into an Ivy.
That doesn't always work
I don't even know if that would work. Although, what the heck? This is not, college issues. Although I did just go to my, I haven't talked since I went to my reunion. Does that have any interesting food stories? I don't have time. Anyway, we're talking about extracurriculars and food. Heston Blumenthal, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, did a kitchen science series for secondary schools in England that you can probably get a hand on, get a hand on that manual where it sets up a lot of interesting experiments for teaching observation and scientific method through cooking. I happen to think that a lot of what they said is wrong in terms of the conclusions they drew from their experiments. But in general, I am a rather curmudgeonly, hard to get along with individual, and so I tend to disagree with almost everything that almost everybody does, including myself. So I would take a look at Heston Blumenthal's kitchen science syllabus.
You should also read your old cooking issues.
Yeah, but that's not a syllabus for kids, although thanks for the plug, Stas. But, oh, by the way, also look at what Harvard does, because even though what Harvard does is aimed at college kids, they do some interesting experiments, and they have open courseware online.
Are you doing that again this year?
I am doing that again this year, but we're not doing the first one. We're doing the second lecture this year, which I don't even know what that means. But... yeah, and anyone on the chat room, I can think more about what would be a good set of things. Because, when I do it, I do more demos for kids. And so usually if it's going to be an extracurricular, you want to do more hands-on. And then the question is, you're teaching more of the science of it, which is what I've normally had to do, or are you teaching more just the basics of cooking? If you're teaching the basics of cooking, I would also look at, kind of what places like the FCI, now the ICC, does in their kind of law techniques class. It's kind of like the basic core competency of what you need to teach people to cook, because I think they did a good job and they've been doing it for decades and decades. But these are all, kind of curricula that you can look at online and get a handle on what
stop.
You think. What?
All right,
they're cutting me off. Yesterday I was on taped me for an episode of The Burger Show, Chef Alvin. So I had to do the science of burgers. Which, I may or may not disagree with. I had to we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later. If you want to know about the science of burgers and what we talked about on, I can't really reveal too much because the episode's not available yet, but Hit us back. We'll talk more cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.